Next case for argument, Metropolitan Life Insurance versus Johnson, Mr. Stotza.
Good morning. Gerald Stotza on behalf of Mildred Johnson, one of the defendants in this matter. Judges, this case is an opportunity for this court to set a standard by which a substantial compliance can be determined when there is...
Let me ask you, what relief are you asking for? Are you asking for a trial or just for summary judgment in your favor?
Well, we're asking for both in the alternative if this panel cannot decide for one. We believe that there was material fact still at issue at the district court level in the matter of whether Mr. Johnson actually prepared the change of beneficiary designation of 1996. On the other side of that coin, we also believe the evidence was insufficient for the district court to find in favor of the other defendants, and if their designation must be thrown out, then our designation is the only one that would stand from 1968. So we're asking for both, Judge.
So you challenge the form?
We challenge the form on multiple reasons.
Authenticity.
There was no affidavits filed verifying this form. We're challenging it on some of the factual errors within it. They obviously the correct plan was not checked. An incorrect plan, which Mr. Johnson was never a member of, was checked. In addition, his marital status was checked as legally separated by court order when there's no dispute that he was divorced. Doesn't sound like something he would forget. In addition...
But you have not contested the authenticity of the signature.
We did raise the issue at district court but could not obtain documents by subpoena from any source more recent than 1983. The documents that were provided in the record from 68 and 83 containing his signature show a gross similarity between those and the signature on the 1986 designation, Judge. Mr. Johnson never had a bank account.
Well, did you put that in evidence and tell the judge to look at the two signatures and...
Yes. We raised that issue in our summary judgment motion.
And she wanted a document expert, didn't
she? Sure, she did. And I had a document expert who reviewed what I had, and she simply said, "You don't have anything new enough.
What do you mean? I don't get that.
You don't have..." Well, she needed a signature from a more recent document.
Why?
According to her, signatures can change over
time.
Yes,
I know they can change, but you could certainly say these signatures look like the signatures of different people, but because of the lapse of years, maybe his handwriting changed. But that would be some evidence for you. As it stands, you don't have any evidence that it's not his signature. Without that evidence, it seems absolutely crucial to your case.
Well, I will say
this. If he signed the thing, what?
Well, I will say this, Judge. I was the second attorney involved in this case. Judge Kakaris was nice enough to give me 60 days to send out subpoenas. By the time the 60 days were up, I had no further evidence at the time we filed our summary judgment motion. However, it would have been very easy for appellees to file an affidavit. They've suggested they've been part of this designation and creation. And they could have filed an affidavit that they saw him sign it. They were there. He intended to do this. He intended to do that. There's no extrinsic evidence reliable about what he intended to do outside this document. Somebody mailed this document to somebody. That's all I know. But there's so many factual errors on it. And the
instruction... Well, if there were a trial, if we reversed, what would be the... So what, you'd call these people would then testify?
Yes.
And you'd have a handwriting expert?
Yes. I will have... handwriting expert.
Odd that he didn't write it. So when did he sign this? What year?
1996, allegedly.
He's odd. He never signed his name once between 1883 and 1896.
Well.
And 1996. That doesn't sound right.
I subpoenaed.
13 years without signing your name.
I subpoenaed family members. Nothing
changed. You would have forgotten how to sign your name in 13 years.
Well, he didn't have a bank account. I subpoenaed family members. Nothing was produced. We only had a 60-day window because I was the second attorney in on the case. We tried our best to obtain something And I think something is still obtainable. However, in the pinch of time, we were not able to obtain something newer for an expert. An expert said she needed something newer to make a firm decision on the signature. But it's not just the signature, Judge. It's the whole thing. 28 years that other designation was in place before this allegedly arose. And then this document appears.
Now, your opponent says, you didn't file a reply brief, did you?
I did not file a reply brief.
But your opponent says that this insurance policy was the only one which had a change of beneficiary designation, and therefore, if he was changing his beneficiary, it must have been for the insurance policy.
I don't understand where that came from, because he had earlier changed the beneficiary on the GE Savings and Security account, which was one box above the one check, from Mrs. Johnson to his mother. And I don't know why he would not have a right to change both his GE pension, his GE Savings and Security, his GE Life, and his GE Accidental and Death. There's nothing in the record that shows that he had no right to make those changes. Could have made any of those changes, and after 28 years, he probably should have known which ones he was enrolled in. I just believe the factual errors here do not allow for it to be a reliable document. We think that...
How old was he when he signed this?
52, allegedly.
So he wasn't decrepit or anything?
No. And he died at 54, 55. In 99.
But he wasn't sick. He wasn't.
He wasn't sick, and you know, the handwriting is different from other documents in the record. You know, it's not a perfect record. That's why we're here. But there's a lot of mistakes on this, including an address he didn't live at, including a marital status that was not correct or true. And also, I may point out that by checking the legally separated box, he was required to get another affidavit from his wife. It's right in the instructions. And no affidavit was ever provided in the record to support this change of beneficiary.
Was he an educated person?
I didn't know him, Judge.
No, I understand.
I believe.
What was his job?
He worked at General Electric from 1960.
Well, what did he do? Was he a manual laborer?
He was a machinist.
Well, maybe he didn't know what legally separated. Maybe he thought divorce meant you were legally separated.
Well, he had to be a party to divorce suit. He was served with summons. He was there was a divorce decree. He should have known he was divorced. He should have known what policies he was enrolled in. He also left out his son, Jimmy R. Johnson, as one of the beneficiaries while naming allegedly two other illegitimate children. So I think that's unusual as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Sosa. Mr. Robinson?
May it please the Court, Attorney Dale Robinson, represent the Appellees, SS&H. You know, the appellants argued that the document submitted by the appellees on the district court level, that there were some issues concerning authenticity as far as the signature is concerned. But they based their argument based upon his previous signature back in 1968. Almost everyone's signature would change over that period of time as far as they're concerned. Like this court,
I don't understand why his subpoenas didn't produce more recent samples of this fellow's signature. How can you go 13 years without signing your name?
Well, Your Honor, I really don't have any answer to that.
Well, there are a lot of fishy things here. Wouldn't this benefit from a trial? I mean, doesn't Judge Lefkoe's opinion really read like a findings in a bench trial rather than a summary? How can we say there's no contested issue of material fact, no genuine issue of material fact here?
Well, Your Honor,
it's all a big blur to me.
Well, Your Honor,
it could easily be a forgery, this document.
Well, Your Honor, the appellant had an opportunity to just...
No, you say no, because people's handwriting can change over this period of time. You're really saying it's impossible for them to prove forgery because your client, didn't produce any recent examples of his signature.
Well, I'm not saying it's impossible.
How can you use that as a defense?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that it's possible for them to prove that it wasn't forged. I'm saying that they had an opportunity at the district court level.
No, they didn't have an opportunity, apparently, because your people didn't produce any signatures, any recent
Your Honor, I don't have any record of any subpoena that was submitted to my office. I was never informed of any subpoenas that would issue.
You mean he just made it up when he said he issued subpoenas?
Well, I don't know if he made it up or not. It was never issued to me at all. There's nothing reflected in the record that there were subpoenas issued at all to my office. And he may have issued subpoenas to previous places of work or so forth, but they were never issued to me, and I had never been informed by my client that subpoenas were issued.
Is he correct that your client didn't submit affidavits with regard to the circumstances under which Johnson, the decedent, signed this change of beneficiary designation?
That is correct, Your Honor. No affidavit was submitted. But in fact, I mean, the decedent signed the form out of the visual sight of the appellees. He had signed the form and submitted to his company G that he had been working with over 20 years. And so those documents were submitted to the appellees as far as they're concerned, and those documents were submitted in the evidence. And the appellant had more than ample time to verify the authenticity of those documents. And in failure to do so, the district court exercises discretion in admitting those documents, and this court has upheld that discretion time and time again.
Well, did they, in effect, not challenge or admit to the authenticity, or?
They did not properly challenge. Like the district court.
How would they properly have challenged it?
They should have properly challenged it. First of all, in the appellants failed to file a response to the 56.1 statement on the one hand.
Is that an admission under those rules?
The district court has the discretion to either admit the things that are entered in on the 56.1 statements if, in fact, when they file a summary judgment, they never file a timely 56.1 rule statement at all. So this court has held in the past that the district court has the discretion to deny the motion altogether. The district court didn't go to the extreme and deny the motion. The district court did three things: on facts that were agreed by both parties, entered those facts in as admission; on the facts that were not contested or properly contested by either party, entered those facts.
Now, is that the fact then of the authenticity of this, the fact it wasn't contested? That's what I'm just not clear about. Is when this document is submitted, that I assume your client submits it as
yes,
authentic, and the only dispute is it's the wrong form, or you checked the wrong line, but substantially complied.
Yes, the document substantially complied if it's in fact admitted in the evidence.
And then on the other hand, they didn't come up and say, wait a minute, this under the whatever they're supposed to do, put up their, they're supposed to contest facts.
Yes,
at
Your Honor.
Stage, and they didn't.
And they didn't do it at the district court level.
And that is that in effect. Did the court treat that as an admission or at least an uncontested fact?
Yes, the court has treated that in the past.
I thought the district court's ground was different. That was a failure to submit evidence of a handwriting expert. Didn't you say that in a footnote somewhere?
The district court says in their opinion that, in fact, the appellants never offer any viable proof to contest the authenticity of the document, but it does, on page 3 of their decision, go through the whole 56-point rule analysis in terms of what discretion that they had been allowed to exercise in the past.
But you seem to have accepted your opponent's claim that without recent signatures, it would be impossible to prove forgery.
Without recent signatures. Well, I'm claiming that, in fact, the signature was a valid signature, that, in fact, the document was received by GE Corporation, and, in fact, it was a valid signature, and they had the opportunity at the district court level to object to that.
Yeah, but you say they really can't because they have no recent signatures to compare it with.
But they do have the responsibility to obtain that. I don't know what efforts that they took to try to obtain that. He is stating here today, the appellant is stating here today, that, in fact, they sent out subpoenas. I was never submitted copies of those subpoenas.
What's this letter? This letter confirms the receipt of your completed designation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's it. It's what she says in footnote 5, that in light of the failure to follow Local Rule 56 on both sides, the court will treat this letter as an uncontested fact, even though not properly authenticated.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's sort of a key to your case, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. In fact, he's received a letter from his corporation that was confirming his change of beneficiary form. That letter was received, I think, sometime in January or February of the following year, in 1997. And they never contested to that particular letter as far as being admitted, in fact, or the authenticity of that particular letter.
In other words, it's an uncontested fact by the application of the local rule.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Based upon the doctrine of substantial compliance, the plan only requires that, in fact, he fills out the change of beneficiary form, and the doctrine.
Now, why did he say legally separated instead of divorced? What's that about?
Your Honor, that could have easily been a mistake made.
How do you make a mistake person. Like that? It's like mistaking what your sex is or something.
Your Honor, well, being legally separated by court order, I mean, it's not the same as a divorce, but it's close. It is close enough, and a person who doesn't have actual knowledge of the inner workings of the court and so forth may make that decision.
Well, everyone knows the word divorce. It's not an esoteric concept.
That is true, Your Honor. That is definitely true.
It has to be divorced and not know it.
That is true, Your Honor. But nevertheless, even despite of that, some of the mistakes that have been made on the document, this court has held in the past, that even if all the I's are not dotted and the T's are not crossed,
No, the question is whether there's so many irregularities on this document that a trial is necessary to determine his intentions. That's the question.
You're asking me, is a trial necessary to determine his intentions?
No, I'm just saying that's the issue. That's not really a question. I mean, you would agree that's the issue. You would just...
Well, there are two children out of wedlock, apparently.
Yes, they are, Your Honor.
So the divorce isn't even relevant in the cases.
Yes, the divorce is not even relevant in this case.
Well, it does sort of muddle the issue about who's, who's separated. I don't want to speculate about the arrangement here, but it does seem a little weird.
Yes, Your Honor, he has been divorced for some time from Mildred Johnson, but he did have two children out of wedlock, which were two of the individuals named as beneficiaries in the latest designation.
Well, who had left out? Somebody was left out.
He had a son by his prior marriage.
Mildred
Johnson, yes, he did.
Mildred's son?
Yes, he did. Left his son out. My time is up.
Okay, thank you very much,
you're
Mr.
Welcome.
Robinson. Mr. Scott, how much time does he have?
Judge, if there were some mistakes made in not objecting specific evidence, it was mistakes made by myself and not by my client. The document.
Now, Mr. Robinson says he didn't get copies of the subpoenas.
No, I sent those copies. They were copies made to Clara Johnson, subpoenas to Clara Johnson, and to the sister of Mr. Johnson and to the IRS. We received IRS documents back after summary judgments were already filed and on record. We received nothing back from the family.
Nothing.
And Clara Johnson was the mother of Mr. Johnson. She's the one who prepared the affidavit stating that these were illegitimate children of Mr. Johnson when taking his last paycheck. She's the one who filed a claim for the SGE savings and security account balance that she was the beneficiary of on the same day that this letter was sent out on March 1st, 1999.
So
there was a lot of activity right around that time. There's a lot of questions here, Judge, that couldn't be answered by the pleadings. I think it's fair to think that we should have a shot at a trial if possible.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Stotka and both counsel.